Good morning. It's good to see so many out here this morning. If you want to turn in your Bibles to the book of Genesis, chapter 4, we'll read a very familiar story and spend a lot of our time there this morning, although we will go a few other places in Scripture this morning. But Genesis chapter 4 is where we'll start. And as you're turning there, I'd like to just say, as we do every Sunday, just a real quick welcome to all of you who can make it out here this morning. I know a lot of you are members here, and this is your normal place to worship and gather together, but some of you are visitors, and we want you to know just how thankful we are that you're here and that you can be numbered with us. And we're so thankful that, we hope that you can feel welcome here and feel at home here as well. I'm sure we've all experienced this on some level or in some way, shape, or form. Maybe it was on a date where the person only wanted to talk about themselves. Maybe it's somebody at work where they're always puffing themselves up. They're always talking about themselves, their family, or their accomplishments over your accomplishments. Maybe it's an athlete or a student or a teacher, somebody in our lives, I'm sure you can think of right now, somebody who is prideful and has the maximum level of self-esteem. And we've all come in contact with it. And this morning we're going to talk about a few things in regards to pride and what pride is. And the reason we're going to talk about it this morning is, and I'll look at this in just a few moments, but I think we're growing up, especially my generation and younger than me, we're growing up in a society where it's all about us, where we are told that if it's not about us, make it about us. If someone disagrees with me, make them agree with me. And that has kind of trickled all the way throughout society, not just younger people, but it's this idea that our society has that we are the most important person in the world, and everybody else, well, is just everybody else. I want to look at what the Bible has to say about some of these things. First off, what is pride? You know, there's a good kind of pride and a bad kind of pride. And I want to make this very clear from the very beginning. And when you look at what pride is, the way pride is defined is this: a reasonable or justifiable self-respect or delight or elation arising from some act, possession, or relationship. Now, that's the technical definition of what pride is. What does that look like? What does this definition look like? Well, how many of you have ever watched your kid take their first steps? Weren't you just proud of them at that moment? Is that a sinful kind of proud, to be proud of your child's first steps or the first time they step on to the ball field or the first time they finish their first book on their own or the first time they complete their first instrumental recital? Or is it wrong to be proud of your spouse for accomplishments? Is it wrong to be proud of yourself when you complete a degree? Is it wrong to be proud of somebody when they commit their lives to the gospel? Those are all kinds of proud that we understand and that we feel on an everyday basis. That idea of pride in your family and certain accomplishments. And notice that this definition says a reasonable or justifiable self-respect or delight. It's reasonable. It's justifiable. We can justify those in our mind to be proud of certain situations. But as I said, there's also a different kind of pride. This is the pride we're going to focus on this morning. And that's defined like this: an inordinate self-esteem or conceit, proud or disdainful behavior or treatment. This is the kind of pride we'll talk about today. Other kinds of words we can put with this kind of definition for pride, we might say boastful. We might say arrogant, vain, pompous, conceited. And those kinds of words, we can probably, like I said just a few moments ago, pull somebody out of our lives, or we're thinking of someone right now to say, that describes so-and-so. That describes who this person is perfectly. That person that I know, they're pompous. They have the highest self-esteem, but not a healthy level of self-esteem, a self-esteem that makes them better than everybody else. They're vain, they're conceited. Here's what I want to focus on this morning. Don't focus on other people. Don't focus on other people, but instead focus on ourselves. This is what the Bible, there's about three or four different words that the Bible uses for pride, and really the root word means something different. We translate it as pride, but here are different words that can also be translated from the same words the Bible uses. And this is just so interesting to me when you look at the biblical words for pride. They can also be translated as glory. which means we're glorifying ourselves, when in the Bible we should be glorifying God. Beauty. You ever known somebody that is so involved with themselves and their looks? Do you think there's a reason why Peter had to say, don't let your appearance be merely outward, but something of the inner heart? Because that pride could be just an outward disdain or an outward beauty. Other words, honor and height and excellence, that we put ourselves up on the highest height when truly God, we know, is at the highest height. We make ourselves excellent when in reality it should be God who is excellent. And these are different words that the Bible uses to describe. One person described pride as self-worship. Pride is giving ourselves the credit for something that God has accomplished. Now, we know what the Bible tells us about pride. We know that in James chapter 4, we're not to boast about tomorrow. We understand that the Bible tells us we're not to boast about ourselves. But yet, pride seems to be, as I said, one of the fastest growing problems that our society has to deal with. And it's one of the fastest growing problems that Christianity has to deal with as well. It's easy for us to look at ourselves, to look at our accomplishments, to look at where we came from, to look at the things going on in our lives. It's easy to look at those things and to feel accomplished, or it's easy to elevate ourselves above others because, well, they aren't like us. They don't look like us. They don't talk like us. They don't dress like us, or whatever the situation is. But when you think about what pride is and that attitude, that prideful attitude, it is at the root of almost every family argument. It's at the root of almost every church split. Pride has torn apart homes. It's ruined relationships. Pride digs us into deep holes until we eventually have just absolutely no way out. And pride has even and will continue to hold people out of heaven. And that's a scary thought, to think that my pride could be the one thing holding me out of my eternal home of heaven. Now, most people are blind to the fact that they are prideful, and so here's what I want us to do. If you're listening to this morning and thinking that this sermon applies to you, it probably does not. Because if you think that you're prideful, chances are you're either not prideful, or two, you're working on it already. And so maybe it does apply to you in some sense, but this is for those of us, and myself included, I'm throwing myself into this category. Those of us who think that this doesn't apply to us, we're probably the ones that have an issue with pride. We're probably the ones that think, well, I'm too good for that. And like I said, I'm throwing myself in that category as well. And so here's what I want us to think about. No matter which category you're in, I want us to think about just ourselves this morning. The attitude we have towards other people, the attitude we have towards other Christians and towards this society. But we're going to look at a story this morning, what I think is one of the biggest stories of pride in Scripture, and that's the story of Cain and Abel. We all know the story of Cain and Abel. Cain killed his brother, and that's all about what we remember. He killed his brother because Abel's sacrifice was better and Cain was not. But let's read this story, and I want to look at a few things Cain taught us about this idea of pride. Let's start reading Genesis chapter 4, and we'll start reading in verse 1. It says, "Now Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bore Cain, and said, 'I have acquired a man from the Lord.' Then she bore again, this time his brother Abel. Now Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. And in the process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought an offering of fruit of the ground to the Lord. Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flock and of their fat. And the Lord respected Abel and his offering. But he did not respect Cain and his offering, and Cain was very angry, and his countenance fell. So the Lord said to Cain, 'Why are you angry? Why has your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin lies at the door, and its desire is for you, but you should rule over it.' Now Cain talked with Abel, his brother, and it came to pass, when they were in the field, that Cain rose up against Abel, his brother, and killed him. Then the Lord said to Cain, 'Where is Abel, your brother?' He said, 'I do not know.' Am I my brother's keeper? And he said, what have you done? The voice of your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. So now you are cursed from the earth, which has opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you till the ground, it shall no longer yield its strength to you. A fugitive and a vagabond you shall be on the earth. And Cain said to the Lord, my punishment is greater than I can bear. Surely you have driven me out this day from the face of the ground. I shall be hidden from your face. I shall be a fugitive and a vagabond on the earth. And it will happen that anyone who finds me will kill me. And the Lord said to him, therefore, whoever kills Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold. And the Lord set a mark on Cain, lest anyone finding him should kill him. As I said, it's a story that we've all heard before. It's a story we've learned. If you grew up in the church and you grew up going to Bible class, we know Cain killed his brother Abel. But to me, there's so much more to this story. But here you have two brothers. One was a tender of sheep. One would tend to the crops. They both brought a sacrifice to the Lord. Now here's what some people don't understand about the story of Cain and Abel. A lot of people just assume that, well, God didn't want the fruit. God didn't want the crop. That's not true. The problem was in what was being sacrificed. Abel offered his best. It says he gave of the firstborn and of the fat. He gave the best possible. Cain did not. Cain just gave some of his crop. It wasn't the best part of the crop. It wasn't the first part of the crop. It was just part of his crop. And so when it came to the sacrifices, it was not whether or not it was meat versus fruit. It was whether or not it was the best of what they had to offer. Now Cain let his pride take over. When Abel's sacrifice was accepted before God and Cain's was not, Cain let his pride take over. God even warned him. God even asked Cain, why has your countenance fallen? He says, if you do well, will you not be accepted? If you do not do well, sin lies at the door. And its desire is for you, but you should rule over it. But that wasn't good enough for Cain. God said, if you do well, you'll be accepted. Give the best, you'll be accepted. But Cain's pride was too much. So Cain killed his brother. Cain was given an eternal punishment, given the mark of God. A vagabond, wherever he went, the ground that he buried his brother in would no longer yield up its fruit to Cain. I want to look at a few things about pride. I want to look at a few things that Cain tells us about what pride is. The first thing that we see is that, and I want to make this point very clear, God didn't make the sacrifices a competition. It wasn't a competition to see who can offer the better sacrifices. But what Cain did was Cain made it a competition. Because when he saw that his brother's was accepted and his was not, well, in his mind, what happened? Abel won, he lost. And his pride just couldn't let that go. This wasn't a competition that God set up. And I want to make that clear. I don't want you to walk away thinking that this was a competition between brothers. That's not what this is. But Cain's pride made it one. And he lost. And when he lost, he let his pride dictate his feelings of hatred towards his brother. His brother had done absolutely nothing wrong. In fact, his brother had done everything right. Now, there's some speculation. The text does say he went out to talk to his brother. There's some speculation about what they talked about. Was Abel arrogant? Was he rubbing it in? I don't know. But from what we get from the text, Abel gave the more perfect sacrifice. In fact, that's what's talked about in Hebrews chapter 11. Abel is brought up in Hebrews chapter 11. It says, by faith, Abel offered a more perfect sacrifice. And in Cain's mind, he lost the little competition in his mind. And so he was going to do something about it. It was all Abel's fault, and Abel deserved to die. It was that idea, and if you have a sibling, do you have a brother or sister? Anything you can do, I can do better. That was his pride talking. Listen to what Paul tells the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 6. He says, "Now these things, brethren, I have figuratively transferred to myself and Apollos for your sakes, that you may learn in us not to think beyond what is written, that none of you may be puffed up on behalf of one against the other." The words kind of got tucked behind the picture there, but you can piece together the rest. He says, I don't want this to become you being puffed up to where this becomes you versus another person. He says, this isn't a competition. Our spirituality is not a competition. This world is not a competition. It's not anything you can do, I can do better. When we're losing the competition, that can motivate us to do some pretty crazy things. Crazy enough to where Cain killed his brother Abel. You know, growing up, I had a soccer coach. And ask Brooke, this is why I need this lesson more than anybody. When I talk about my years, even starting out at the age of 5 playing soccer and hockey, when I talk about any of the sports I play, when I talk about, I even got into acting in high school, when I talk about some of the plays I was in, they were the best plays, and I was the best player, and my team was always the best. We could not be beat. And I just talk about, you know, like I could have gone pro if I really wanted to, because that's just how I view myself, because I was that good. I couldn't be more wrong. Growing up, I played on a team that we were the worst team. In fact, we got last place every year. And my parents, they loved my soccer coach. And my soccer coach, he did keep telling me, if you want to go to another team and win, you are more than welcome to. He said, but I would love to keep you on my team. And I said, yeah, I want to play for you. And so every year I played for this coach. And the reason I did was because his motto was, it's all about having fun. He said, don't go out. We go out there and try to win. But he says, don't go out there and lose and then start making excuses. And when you're losing, you start hurting other players. When you're losing, that's when the cuss words come out, or our attitude really comes out, because it was just a big competition and we wanted to win, and now that we're not winning, well, I'm going to take my ball and go home. He said, go out there and have fun. If we win, great. If we lose, guess what? We had fun playing the game, right? And that's what I grew up with. Now, we were always the last place team, but you know what? I had fun playing. We live in a society that when we're losing, we're told we can do whatever it takes to make sure we get back into the winner's circle. And spiritually, we do the same as well. For some reason, we compare ourselves to others in an effort to make us feel better. We tell ourselves, well, at least my kid doesn't look like that or act like that. We wear these kinds of clothes, and I would never wear that kind of clothes. I'll never forget, one of the biggest humbling experiences of my life was before Brooke and I had children. We would look at other people's kids and we would say, my kid would never act like that. You want to know why? Because I would spank them, or I would teach them, and that's just what I would do, and I'm the perfect parent. Well, guess what? First time on an airplane, boy, was I completely wrong, because the same thing I told myself that my child would never do, well, he did that. And it was the most humbling experience that I've ever had. And sometimes we just need to look at life that it's not a competition. It's about where we're headed after this life is over. And we may need help. Life is not a competition, but we make it a competition because we feel like that if we're losing, we need to get back in the winner's circle. Now, heaven is not about, I made it and you didn't. If heaven was about the winner's circle versus the loser's circle, if that's our attitude, we probably won't make it to the winner's circle, because that's not what heaven is about. We need to see what we can do to help other people along the way. Another thing Cain taught us is that pride and envy are the exact opposite of what biblical love should be. Now we read in 1 Corinthians chapter 13 and verse 4, love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself up. It's not puffed up. Look at the different kinds of things that it says love is not, or love does not. Love is not envy, which is another way of maybe saying pride, that when we envy something else, we want something else from other people. Love does not parade itself. It's not puffed up. Those are all different ways of saying the same thing. Love's not prideful. Instead, love suffers long and is kind. Now, Cain was too prideful to admit that Abel's sacrifice was truly better. Cain was too envious of Abel and the blessing he received from God. Instead of loving his brother, instead of being long-suffering and kind towards his brother, he let his pride and envy kill his brother. Can you imagine how many conflicts would be resolved if love overshadowed pride and envy? Can you imagine what the Lord's church, the Lord's kingdom would look like if we would just think before we speak? Could you imagine what Marion Street could be like if everyone loved the way God loved? If we all put our own egos aside and started worrying about the betterment of God's kingdom. When you think about Jesus, Jesus did just that. He put his pride, he put his ego, he put everything aside so that he can come down here, humble himself, even to the death on the cross. His example of love was the most selfless and least prideful thing that has ever been done. Philippians chapter 2 does tell us he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death. Imagine how much different this world would be if we had that kind of attitude. A selfless attitude instead of a selfish. Cain showed us that pride is earthly. Cain was all about what was happening in the here and in the now. He wanted his sacrifice to be accepted. He was only concerned about the physical things and the physical consequences. He never thought about his eternal and spiritual consequences between him and God until it was too late. And then once it was too late and God gave him his consequences, he says, "This is too much for me to bear." Well, at that point, it's almost like, too bad, Cain. You let your pride block your view of your eternal soul. Did he not learn anything from his parents? He showed us that pride is earthly. Listen to what James says in James chapter 3, if you want to turn with me there. In James chapter 3, starting in verse 14, it says, "But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, and demonic. For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are." Now, if that's not a wake-up call, I don't know what is. I know we talked about this in our James class, but he says here that if you have these things in your heart, he says this kind of wisdom does not descend from above. It is earthly, it is sensual, and it's demonic. You ever thought about that? Our pride, our self-seeking attitude, our self-seeking heart, James says it's demonic. It's earthly. Because we're only concerned about what's going on here on earth and not concerned about our eternal consequences. 1 John chapter 2, verse 16 would say, "For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world." That's what Cain was concerned about. You know, we talk so much about how this world is not our home. We don't want to be attached to the earthly things. But what we need to see is our pride is a product of this earth. Pride makes us see only what's in the here and now, and we forget that we are all spiritual beings trying to make it to our goal of heaven. Along those same lines, Cain taught us that pride is what separates us from God. Listen to a few of these verses very quickly, and then we'll look at how this applies to Cain. But look at a few of these verses. Psalm chapter 10 and verse 4. It says, "The wicked in his proud countenance does not seek God. God is in none of his thoughts." Because when we are prideful and when we are self-seeking and envious in our hearts, why do we even need God? And see, this is very dangerous because a lot of us would never even consider ourselves prideful because we're Christians. And so of course we have God. Of course we need God. We're here every Sunday, so this verse doesn't apply to me. Of course I'm not proud because I think about God and I seek God and God is in my thoughts. But here's what we kind of forget. At least myself. There's times where I seek God, I pray to God, I want God to help me through a situation. He's in my thoughts. You know, we ask ourselves, what would Jesus do? But then when it really comes down to it, well, God, that's not the answer I wanted, so I'm going to go do this. Well, I think I can do it better this way. Maybe God's steering us in this direction. Well, I like this direction better. And I can do it on my own. Listen to what he says in Luke chapter 1, verse 51. He has shown strength with his arm. He has scattered the proud in the imagination of their hearts. The moment that Cain let his pride take over, he completely negated the meaning of his sacrifice. Do you see that Cain tried? God was in his mind. God was in his heart. He offered a sacrifice to God. But because of his pride, it completely negated anything he was trying to do with that sacrifice. Because our pride is what separates us from God. Now, maybe God knew Cain's heart before his sacrifice. Maybe that's why God didn't accept it. I read that somewhere. I don't know. But think about this. So many people are living in sin. And so many people continue to live in sin, separated from God, because they don't want to admit that they are wrong. That's pride. Sometimes we are too prideful of who we are and what we are doing that we don't want to admit that we need God, or maybe we don't even want God. And there are many of us who believe we are living proper lives, but we're too prideful to see that we're just as lost as everybody else in this world. That separates us from God. Pride blinds us from our need for God. I don't think you would argue with me when I say that all of us need God in our life. But pride blinds us from that need because we think we can do it all on our own. Instead of killing his brother, here's what Cain could have done. Cain could have gone to Abel, asked Abel, "How come yours was accepted, mine wasn't? What can I do better?" He could have asked God. God went to him. God talked to him. And he says, "Cain, why has your countenance fallen?" How come Cain couldn't have said, "God, what do I need to do better the next time? How can I offer a better sacrifice?" But instead of seeing his need to rely more on God, he saw his need to take care of the problem, and that was killing his brother. Do we understand our need for God? Matthew chapter 5 and verse 3 says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." If you were in my Sermon on the Mount class, we looked at what that verse really meant. The poor in spirit means that we are spiritually bankrupt. We have come to the realization that without God, we are nothing. And Jesus says, those are the blessed ones. The ones that realize that they need God in every aspect of their life. The ones that realize they are poor, spiritually bankrupt, that they need God. Those are the ones that belong in the kingdom of heaven. We absolutely need God. And we need other people's help. Sometimes we're too prideful to accept other people's help. Listen, we need each other. If our goal is truly to be in heaven someday, it's only going to happen when we use each other, when we rely on each other. We are a team. And instead of looking at everybody as individuals or individual family units, we need to start looking at each other as a team, as one unit, because we cannot get to heaven on our own. We need God and we need the help of other people. But pride makes us think that we can do it on our own. And sometimes we think other people wouldn't care about our problems or what we're going through, and other times we think we can handle everything on our own. I'll never forget, as now I still consider myself a young preacher, but I've learned a lot in the years I've been doing this so far. I'm the kind of person, if I want it done right, I'd rather do it myself. And I know some of you are like that as well. And so here's what I tend to do. I tend to, if there's a bunch of tasks out there, I tend to just say, yeah, I'll do it. I can do it. Bring it on. Let me do it, because I want it done right. I want it done my way, because my way is the best way. And if you disagree with me, well, then you're the one that's obviously wrong, and I'm the one that's right. I mean, that's just kind of how I view things. And many of us do. I'll never forget one time I had so much going on, and Brooke just looked at me and she said, why don't you just ask people for help? Why don't you give that to somebody else? They can do it, and they can probably do it just as good. They can might not be your way, but it will still get done. Well, that's a tough lesson for us to learn sometimes. To know that we can ask other people for help. To know that we can ask God for help. To know that we're not in this all alone. To know that everything will get done if we just get over ourselves, get over myself, and ask other people to help me. If Cain would have just realized that he needed God's help instead of taking his anger out on his brother, the Bible, I think, would be a very different story. Pride elevates us, elevates ourselves above all else. Cain was only concerned about himself, his sacrifice, and nothing else. He was only concerned about himself and nothing else. In Deuteronomy chapter 8, verses 17 and 19, it talks about Pharaoh and how Pharaoh was only concerned about himself in the time of Moses. And we can go back to Exodus and we can read the story of Pharaoh. He was only concerned about his kingdom and his people. And he was so prideful and so stubborn. His heart continued to be hardened. Well, we know the story. God took care of his pride. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 12, it says, therefore, let him who think he stands take heed lest he fall. We all know that verse, but we feel like it doesn't apply to us, or at least I don't. That applies to everybody else. That applies to everybody that doesn't agree with me. Well, they better watch out, because God's way is the best way and I know better. They need to listen to me. And if they think that they're going to accomplish whatever they want, well, they need to take heed lest they fall. Well, do I think that way about myself sometimes? Because pride blinds us from that fact. And lastly, pride leads us to destruction. Because of pride, Cain killed his brother. First murder that we read about in the Bible. Because of his pride, Cain received an everlasting punishment. God marked him. God said the ground would no longer yield up its fruit to you because the blood of your brother cries out. You'll be a vagabond wherever you go. Proverbs chapter 16, verses 18 and 19 say, pride goes before destruction. That should be a sobering statement. Because what it says there is destruction will happen because of pride. Pride goes before destruction. First comes pride, then comes destruction. And a haughty spirit before a fall. Better to be of a humble spirit with the lowly than to divide the spoil with the proud. See what he says there? What great information that Solomon gives to his son. Better to be a humble spirit and be with the lowly, the poor, than to be proud and be able to divide all the spoils of this world. Because pride goes before destruction. Some would even say this is what led to Satan's downfall in Isaiah chapter 14. Let's turn to the book of Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 14. And Now, I'm not telling you what you need to think about these verses. I'm just telling you what other people think. Some people think this is talking about Babylon. Other people think this is talking about the fallen star that is the devil. I'll let you make your own conclusion. You can come ask me my opinion later. But listen to what he says here about pride, starting in verse 12. Isaiah chapter 14, starting in verse 12. How you are fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning. How you are cut down to the ground, you who weakened the nations. For you have said in your heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will also sit on the mount of the congregation on the farthest sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Yet you shall be brought down to Sheol, to the lowest depths of the pit. Do you see the attitude there? He says, you have said that you're going to ascend into heaven. You're going to be above the stars of God. You're going to sit on the mount of the congregation. You're going to ascend to above the heights of the cloud. You will be like the Most High. He says, well, that's what you say. What's really going to happen, you're going to be brought down to Sheol, to the lowest depths of the pit. If that doesn't remind us of Proverbs 16, I don't know what will. Pride goes before destruction. Now here's what I want to ask. Think of the story of Cain and Abel for just a moment. What if Cain loved instead of hated? What if his love was long-suffering and kind instead of being filled with pride and envy? What if he prayed to God, talked to God, and asked Him, what do I need to do to be better? Instead of acted on his feelings and his pride and killed his brother. What if Cain was humbled by being rejected and said, I'm going to better myself. I'm going to push forward. I'm going to go on and be stronger instead of be prideful. Have you ever thought about that before? Well, think about this. Cain was the oldest. Cain was the firstborn in his family. What does that mean? Well, that means that the family would go through Cain. That means that the Bible, if Cain would not have killed his brother, we would be reading a very different story. The Bible would follow Cain and his family and his kids and his grandkids. Instead, because of Cain killing his brother Abel, well, now Cain is out of the picture, and obviously Abel's out of the picture, so who does the family go to? The next brother, Seth. Now, we read about Seth in the lineage of Christ. You ever thought that if Cain loved instead of hated, prayed instead of acted, was humbled instead of being too prideful, that we might be reading Cain's name in the book of Luke? When it traces the lineage of Christ all the way back to Adam? Have you ever thought about how different his life would be if he wasn't too prideful to admit that he had done something wrong? But his pride didn't allow that. His pride held him out of the greatest story ever told. It changed the story and it has changed the world. What about your life? How has pride changed your life? How has it changed the way people look at you? I mentioned before that if you're sitting here this morning thinking about all the ways you need to change, you might not need this lesson. But if you're sitting here this morning thinking that this does not apply to you, then this lesson is for us. If you are the person like me that doesn't think about others or how others see you, then this is for us. If you are the person that is constantly sizing yourself up to other people to see how much better we are, then this is for us. It has been said that people who are prideful, they get their pride from an insecurity that they have somewhere in their life. And people who are insecure, we feel like we have to do whatever it takes to make sure we don't feel that insecurity. And so pride takes over. We puff ourselves up. It's been said that pride is the band-aid over insecurities in our life. Doesn't that describe Cain perfectly? Cain's pride stemmed from his insecurity and his sacrifice. His answer was pride and murder. Well, our answer when pride takes over might be putting other people down, bullying other people, puffing ourselves up. Here's the thing. Cain knew that he had done wrong. After the dust settled, have you ever wondered why he tried to bury his brother? God says that the ground where you buried your brother, his blood is crying out to me. He tried to bury his brother. He tried to hide his brother. He knew he had done wrong. Why would he try to hide it if he didn't know? And then God comes around saying, where's your brother Abel? Like God doesn't know where he is. He just wants Cain to fess up. And Cain says, am I my brother's keeper? I don't know where he is. He knew exactly what he had done wrong. And I think deep down we know that sometimes pride gets the best of us too. Let's not try to cover it up. Let's not try to cover it up with more pride. You know, it doesn't matter where we come from. It doesn't matter who we are. It doesn't matter how much money we make. It doesn't matter what fancy toys we have. It doesn't matter what clothes we wear or don't wear. It doesn't matter what clothes the kids wear. It doesn't matter whose team is better. What matters is the fact that we are all sinners. We all need God's grace and forgiveness. And if this life was a competition, all of us would lose without God. I know I mentioned this already, but just think about the sacrifice of Jesus. The least prideful thing that has ever been done. Put himself aside for the betterment of all of us. Are you ready to give yourself to Christ? Are you ready to start living a new life today? Are you ready to put our pride aside and start living our lives for Jesus Christ? To put ourselves, humble ourselves, so that you and I can walk in newness of life and spend eternity with our Father in heaven? If you need to do that today, don't wait a moment longer. Do it now. Start living the life for Jesus. And I guarantee wonderful things will start to happen. If you need to do that now, come forward as we stand and as we sing.